Welcome back to the Outdoor Adventures Podcast. We are on location in Dylan Williams' family basement, the basement of his parents, the trophy room, if you will. Got with me Dylan Williams, and we've been measuring some heads today. How long do you think we did that for?
Had it been at least an hour and a half, I'd say. Got eight done, we think.
Yeah. And I mean, we're not experts. We're following the SCI score sheet and doing the best we can to be consistent. And we were just curious. So we're set up a little different than normal. We're not at a table. We're holding mics. It's a whole different deal than normal. Do you need to take that call?
No, it's okay. Okay. It's okay. Just keep on rolling.
Okay. So, yeah, so let's call this the trophy edition of the Outdoor Adventures Podcast. Your dad negotiated a dump truck sale when I first got here.
Yep, sure did. And you got to help with some load up.
Yeah, I got to load some rims in the back of a guy's pickup. Mm-hmm. And then your dad's going to haul this dump truck over the pass, probably like a good 6 hour there and back kind of trip.
Yeah, we're going to truck it.
That'll be fun.
It's weird being in here.
Yeah,
for this podcast.
You're feeling uncomfortable? Do you need to hop on that Peloton and get your heart rate up?
Well, I mean, just we're so far apart, it feels like. Like, we're usually so crammed together.
I know. We are usually tight. And, you know, you want. I don't know if we're messing, if our mics are going to pick up as good. It feels fine, but who knows. But there's a lot of deer in this room. We did not measure some of the largest specimens. We have a couple giant blacktails hanging over your head, and they're just unbelievable paddles on them. They're really, really cool bucks.
Yeah, this one, I mean, this buck, the 5x4, the paddles, that was the first day I ever went hunting.
The first day you ever went?
Yeah, I was seven.
That's the biggest blacktail I think I've ever seen.
Six or seven, I don't remember, yeah.
That's
insane. Just remember seeing the buck. We were just kind of road hunting, petering along because they had me with them. My dad and my uncle, and my dad saw it, bailed out, and I just hear distant, and then turns out though they left the pickup running, doors open, and bailed off the hill and left me in it.
Hey, when you see a buck like that, it's understandable.
Yeah, you gotta do what you gotta do.
And then, you were seven.
Yeah, next thing you know, here comes the two guys and that giant buck, and I was like, man, this is easy.
The width on that thing is unbelievable. I mean, because it goes all the way up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're going to get some points. I measured it. It's like 6 inches around in circumference. That's pretty sweet. We didn't want to take them off the wall. We'll get a picture of them. But they are some nice bucks. They probably would be the highest scoring blacktails in the room, I think.
Yeah, they would be. I'm pretty sure. Especially this other one, the typical.
There's a typical to the left. So it's a 4x5 and a 4x4. Double eye guards on both, though. So,
yeah.
We had some fun measuring some stuff, and we've talked about doing this one for a while. Just mix it up a little bit, try something different. We're not really trophy hunters, but we do. There's some trophies down here.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Some cool bucks. You measured a big fork and horn buck that we'll talk about how that scored, which was pretty good score for a fork and horn buck.
Yeah.
But, on this whole trophy topic, this happened on December 12th of 2023. This guy, Ryan Muirhead in Minnesota, he was going out for the last day of the Minnesota muzzleloader hunt for a whitetail tag. And he finds this huge 9x10 elk pinned flat on its back alive. Its antlers were stuck in the mud. It's negative 25 degrees out.
Holy crap.
And other people had probably driven by it and just thought it was dead, but it was still alive. So this guy gets a 2x4 and helps get this elk free. And it stumbles into the woods, not looking real good. He figured it probably wouldn't make it. It ended up dying 2 days later. And the Department of Natural Resources, I'm guessing the DNR, Minnesota DNR, called him and said, hey, you can come get this head. And so they let him take the head. So it's 9x10 bull, the biggest ever in Minnesota history, the third largest elk in the world, scored a 475 5/8 inches.
Gosh, dang.
And he found it laying stuck in the mud, frozen to the ground. Can you imagine? Like, what was really striking to me, number one, as an outdoorsman, is like, this is December 2023, that there's still the third largest elk in the world out there walking around, you know? Because I think as hunters, we're often like, there's no big stuff left. Everything was killed in the 20s or the 30s or the 40s or whatever. But this is the third biggest in the world.
I bet there's plenty of them out there. It's just a matter of finding them. There's a lot, especially here in Oregon, there's a lot of ground that a lot of people aren't going.
Yeah.
Majority of people aren't going.
They aren't going to be willing to go in those steep, steep draws that, buck country.
Oh, yeah.
Or elk country, like the big Roosevelts. You know there's some giant Roosevelts in some of those just nasty spots.
Without a doubt.
So we did a little scoring today. My brother was the biggest buck that I brought with me. My brother killed a giant 4-point, I can't remember when, maybe 4 years ago, maybe five. Could have been even longer than that.
It was 10.
It was 10 because he had another tag after it. That's right. So it's coming up on 9, 10 years ago, you know, that he shot this thing. And he had it, he's got it shoulder mounted. And it's on his mantle or his fireplace in his house. So I went there this morning and knocked on the door and told my niece, I need your dad's deer. She goes, why? I'm like, I'm going to measure it for a podcast. So I didn't do that one first. I started with, your 3-point buck you killed a few years ago, which is what we're telling ourselves, a buck we would pass on going forward. Nice buck, good wide 3-point. I mean, nothing wrong with him. But a buck that we're going to pass on as we mature as hunters, in
Try
theory.
To.
Maybe last day.
Yeah.
Depending on how the season's going.
Yeah, it just be, I don't even know. Like, I say that all the time, especially blacktail. But once you see him standing up alive in front of you, it's so different.
Well, and this buck is probably about the same size as the mule deer I got this year. And I wouldn't have passed that this year. You know? But going forward, I want to try to shoot some of these bigger ones. Dylan's grandpa, my Uncle Billy, there's a giant 4x5 I'm looking at right now that's about the same size as my brother's buck. Very similar genetics. Be curious to score that one, but we didn't want to take it off the wall. And so, you know, this 3-point, so we're saying, I would say those are 2.5-year-old deer, the 3-point I shot this year and the one that you've got there, maybe 3.5-year-olds, but I'm guessing 2.5-year-olds. It measured out at about 102 2/4 inches is what I got on that one.
Yeah.
And I mean, not a bad deer. You know, we're new to this, obviously, so I don't know how accurate our measurements are, but when doing a little bit of research on what's considered a trophy mule deer is anything over 145 inches. And they say 150 to 170 inch is kind of really what you're going for. At least a 20 inch spread out front, 4x4 or better kind of thing. You know, double eye guard's always a plus. If you're going for scoring, which we generally are not. The largest mule deer ever taken in Oregon in 1925 scored 321 1/8 inches. It's a big buck.
It's like all of these combined.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but yeah. It's a lot of inches. And the largest whitetail taken in Oregon was 178 2/8 inches. And the largest blacktail, 208 1/8 inches.
That's crazy to me. I don't get that.
That's a big blacktail.
That's humongous.
But when you read the guidelines for shooting a trophy blacktail, it just says at least 4 points on each side.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think even in, you know, Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young, they know that getting a blacktail is a trophy no matter what you got to do. So, so let's talk about some of these other bucks we scored. What was the first one that you did?
I did the that 4-point, similar to my 3-point, probably close to the same age, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah, we grabbed very similar bucks to start with, and we started with smaller ones because we just wanted to get comfortable first.
So this was a 2022 buck. Grandpa Billy got it in Ochoco's at, and I got that one scored at 104 1/3 inch.
So, and it was a 3x4, right? Or is it a true 4x4?
It's probably would be a 3x4. I don't know. It's hard to tell. That back left side, it depends on what you probably, if I shot, I'd probably say 4x4.
Yeah.
But I bet somebody else would be like, no.
That's a 3x4.
Yeah, that's probably 3.
I can't see the other side. I can see that little nub on the right side. And that's a 4 on that right side for sure. But I don't know about the left. But either way, I mean, I think that little extra point threw you over your other 3 point there that I measured at 102.
Yeah. Well, and that one also got some measuring off of an eye guard too. I don't think my 3 point might have a little bit of one.
Yeah. I gave you 2 eye guards on the 3 point, but they're little. I mean, that eye guard on him is quite a bit bigger.
It's probably this
comes out about the same.
Bigger than both of those, I bet. Yeah,
probably. You also measured a giant blacktail eye guard wise. You're the biggest eye guard buck we think in the room. Now, the one thing we're not clear about, there's this gnarly 4x5 mule deer that Billy also shot that's got like double eye guards on both sides. So it's got at least 2 eye guards on the right side and definitely 2 on the left, but you might even get 3 or 4 on that right side from a pro that knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, then where do you measure the circumference? Like the first one is below those eye, you know, like the first one was below the eye guards.
Yeah. I think you'd have to go under that big knot that's there. And I don't know.
Well, you'd get some girth out of that.
You could get some points if you could measure that whole thick thing. That's the thing we didn't notice. So I've got a 3x5 blacktail that I thought, okay, this paddle is going to really help me out. But if that paddle doesn't extend all the way up through the tines, you don't really get to count it, you know? So you lose, even though, and granted, we're very novice. I think, is this the first time you've ever tried to score?
Oh, yeah. First time I've ever even wanted to do it, really.
Yeah. Like, see, I've never done it either. I've scored my antelope with a score sheet, but that's the only time I've ever done it. So I'd like to see what the real guys say. We're going to have to save these sheets until we get them actually scored and see how close we were.
Yeah, I would like to take a few of these in. I don't know about the first two.
Yeah, those were our getting...
Just kind of...
Those were our warm-ups.
Yeah.
Then I measured my 3x5 blacktail, and it came out at 116.5 inches. But the piece on it that I wasn't sure about was kind of the fifth point. And like the circumference of the fifth point, like how, you know, I mean, it was a scrawny. I only got like an inch out of that fifth point circumference, but I added everything I thought I could add, I added, except for maybe a half inch extra eye guard.
Right. So. I had your dad's calling the rattlehead buck because the taxidermist on it.
Yeah.
Sounds like they put bouncy balls in it.
Yeah. Something's fallen inside of that mount. And the ears are a little, you know, we've all seen old taxidermy. This thing, back in the day, they didn't leave a lot of cape. It's pretty much straight neck kind of deal. And definitely old school taxidermy. We'll post this with a picture of that one. You can hold it up since you scored it.
And I got that one at 121.
Yeah.
And it, I don't know. I mean, it's got to be in the ballpark.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, it's a solid 4 point. It's a 4 point that most of us are probably going to shoot if we see it, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And his bigger 4 point that I wanted to bring, was mounted so well on his wall that I didn't want to mess his wall up. He's out of town right now. But anyway, that one super long and skinny. So he's not going to get much girth out of it, but definitely going to get some inches.
Yeah.
So
I got, also, the big forky as well that you mentioned, that one came out to 138.5.
Which is, I think, amazing for a fork and horn.
Yeah.
And it was also the widest buck we measured, right? How wide was it?
It was 22.5.
It's 22.5 inches wide. That's crazy. Because see, a lot of these big fours and big fives, that front measurement, the main beam measurement that you have to do is that inside antler, and it starts to turn in, but on that old fork, that ain't turning in at all.
No, that inside span, it's different, because I like, if I look at that fork and horn and I look at either Charlie's buck or the big 4 point on the wall, 4x5 on the wall, I feel like that fork and horn would fit in between that.
Yeah,
just based off of this look of looking at both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have any question which one was bigger.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, yeah, totally. But not according to the tape.
Yeah.
And so Charlie's big 4-point came in at 171 1/4 inches is what I got it at. And, I mean, I think the things that make it so massive is, number one, main beam's 20 inches, you know, on pretty much on both sides. It was 20 inches on one side, 18 3/4 on the other. And then you had a 21-inch spread in the front. And then the girth was between 5.5, and it only went down to about 3.5 inches at the skinniest part. So on all my circumference measurements, it just held, you know. Yeah. So good symmetry throughout. Obviously, the crab claw genetics costed a little bit here and there, but I think I'm probably pretty close, you know. I mean, I would guess, since my brother's buck, I was being a little generous, maybe, like a professional, maybe even you lose 10 inches, but then you still got a 160-inch buck, which
I feel
like is a buck that anyone's
going to... I would love to have somebody actually measure it.
Yeah, a pro.
Yeah.
We'll take it to the sportsman show in Portland with us.
We should. We should take... Yeah, and I would like to take a cut, or maybe not to the sportsman show, but I'd like to have a couple of these done by an actual professional and just kind of see how close we were.
Yeah. I measured my biggest mule deer that I've ever taken, and his name is George, and he's a 3x3. He came in at 127 1/4 inches. And the thing that I thought was cool about him was the T1 measurements. He has a 14-inch, or sorry, T2. His T2 is 14 inches on the one side. Just a big old blade coming out there.
So the only thing that, like, I'm thinking about, like this blacktail one right here, it's 101. And I understand that you said George was 127.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a significant jump. But if you look at those two bucks together, the entire head fits in it.
Yeah, what you're talking about, that 4x4 blacktail with the long...
Yeah, long eye guards.
Long eye guards, 4x4, looks like a whitetail, but it was only a 9-inch spread across.
Yeah, and I got 101 1/4 on that.
Beautiful buck, but still, I mean, 26 more inches?
I mean, it's a fair jump, but like, I don't know, it just doesn't, it just doesn't register with me. It doesn't make sense to me.
But if you go a 9-inch spread to, I think that was almost a 20-inch inside spread on mine. So, okay, I got you 11 inches there. But the 4-point instead of the 3-point, the double eye guards, I only have one on mine. The 3-point, 4-point thing makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And I think that's why when you're reading in the book, it's like you want to kill at least a 4x4 because you're just losing, even if it's only a 6 inches on each side, there's 12 inches right there. So,
yeah.
I'm pretty good at basic math.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. Well, it's kind of your job.
Yeah, sure.
You know, it's a big part of it. Yeah. I like doing this podcast in here.
Yeah, it's cool. It's kind of nice to sit on a couch.
Yeah, it's comfortable.
It's very comfortable. We'll see how our audio turns out.
You're going to have to get our minions to move the couches so I don't have to turn my neck.
Yeah, it's hard to have to turn our head.
Yeah.
And I'd like a pillow on this side.
Yeah, you're going to have to get people down here.
I'm not quite balanced. What's the story on that guy to the left of Grandpa Billy's?
That was Uncle Lucky's buck.
Okay.
Up on the middle fork, he was logging. He logged up there that's what he did for a living. He took my dad one weekend during hunting season, and they always did a bunch of big pushes. My dad was the pusher.
Mm.
And my dad jumped this guy out right underneath the landing that our Uncle Lucky was on and got him.
He's a nice 4x4, nice eye guards, unusual taxidermy. Like, I wouldn't look at it. I wouldn't say, oh, blacktail. You know, you look at it and you're like, is that something different? Just because it's so dark on the head.
Yeah, it's another one. It's one of my favorites. It looks, I think, if you had that head tilted a little different, it would really show off how nice and big that 4-point is. Because it's up there in the caliber, that 4-point, this other big one above me.
Yeah, it's a nice buck.
It's very similar.
No doubt. I mean, these guys have killed a lot of nice stuff. They have a whole nother room with other heads in them, but the fur was getting all over the place and
had to move them out.
The old school Williams taxidermy method was a skull cap, what you left the hair on, you left the hide on. And like my dad's big 4-point is done with that same style. And I just remember him like rock salting it and like leaving it outside for quite a while. And like, I don't know what else he did to it.
That's all I've ever done.
And then he mounted it on a board, but it doesn't seem to have any hair loss. So I don't.
Well, my dad made a good point because we just kind of had those sitting in like the windowsills down here. And then off in the corner, like on tables or whatever. And every time I'd like, you'd pick them up and move them, or you'd, one would rest on the other one. It just moving them around so much or setting stuff on them, it would end up pulling the hair with it.
Gotcha. Using it to hold your drinks and stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Yeah. Or you guys just crash them into each other.
Yeah. I come down here at night and would just play fight.
They were your trucks, basically.
Yeah. These
some kids play with trucks. 20. Dylan just got skulls. Oh, and he was 20. Yeah.
It's fine.
It's cool. It's a nice room. It's a good setup for a trophy room for sure. Cause you got some tall walls. You got some, we're kind of light on the elk. I didn't bring any elk score sheets. We haven't taken a lot of bull elk in our family, like maybe 2 or 3, and they weren't mostly spikes, right?
Yeah. My dad's got 3 spikes, but I don't know if it's just, they were just doing spike tags at that time. I don't
know.
Could
have been, yeah.
I don't know what it was, but he has 3, and then I know Uncle Chris has 1.
I've only ever killed a cow. And then I was trying to get my son all excited about hunting, and he's like, I just want to kill a big elk. I'm like, yeah, I don't really do that.
Yeah, so. I don't know how to find those,
yeah.
Turns out.
Maybe we should mule deer hunt, and we'll keep buying points for the giant.
Well, I think unit. That plan we talked about is going to be the best.
Yeah.
I'm glad he was excited about it.
Yeah, so we're going to do the mentor points with buying him a point every year, and then like in his early 20s, he could get one of the big Oregon units, which is like Winnaha or Mount Emily. They're like 25-plus point draws, you know? But until I think until he's 16, he can get that mentor point plus another point. So that's 8 points right out of the gates, you know, and then you put in for it for another 8 years, and... No, it has to be more than that. Maybe I don't know. He's gonna have a lot. He's gonna get there in his 20s, is what I figured out.
Yeah, it's 9, right? It's the start, 9 to 16.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. So that's 7 plus 7. So there's 14 points when he's 16, and then we need another probably 10. So he'll probably be 26, and he can draw one of these big bull tags.
I mean. That's not that long.
No, really. I'm 44, and I've been putting in for the last 15 years.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem, too, I think, here. We just haven't put a lot of time into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no, for elk hunting, we don't do a lot of scouting, or we don't necessarily have a plan for elk. Deer, well, it's a little easier.
I do think there's also an advantage to the archery hunting thing for elk, where you can call them, and they respond to calls, and... I don't know. That's kind of been my focus the last couple of years.
Easier to locate, yeah. Can you call very well?
No.
So we need to get a caller.
I'm working on it. Yeah, I'm working on it. It's not as easy as it looks, and I've watched a lot of YouTubes, and I've tried, and it's number one, just having a latex reed in your mouth, it's weird.
I always gag.
Yeah, they're not great to have in your mouth, yeah. But... I'm going to work at it. That's one of my goals.
I'm pretty good with the Hoochie Mama.
Hoochie, and that's not a bad call, honestly. Like, yeah. I mean, the second day we were out this year, we were just goofing around with one of those, and nothing responded. Nothing came in, but as we walked, I don't know, 300 more yards, there was 2 spike bulls just like kind of looking around.
I think it, all the calls, this is another thing that I think about elk hunting, and not exactly sure if it's true, but I feel like if you're a good enough caller and in that time of year when they're rutting, if you have that right season, you find them in the rut, making noise, you can make more noise on your end walking in just because they might think that you're another elk because you're making the same exact noises that they are making type of thing.
Yeah. I don't think you have to be super quiet when they're rutted out. And I mean, you can rake trees and you can do all kinds of stuff. Yeah. I mean, you don't necessarily want them to visually see you, but.
When you got on a couple setups too, that had been pretty fun.
Yeah, it was really cool. Yeah, we, it gets you going. It gets you like understanding why people do it, you know?
Yeah.
And my buddy Joe, he goes over east somewhere. I don't really know, undisclosed location, but he typically archery hunts and he gets an elk and he's not picky about cow or bull. You know, he kind of shoots whatever elk comes under. He's a tree stand hunter. And then he'll harvest that elk and then he'll usually get, you know, a bear or a cougar as well, sitting in the same stand.
Like a pile or something?
Yeah, I mean, technically, I don't know, but like they do around the same area. He's kind of elusive as to what his tactics are.
His tactics, yeah, I get it.
But he's killed a lot of nice blacktail from tree stands too. I was telling Kyler that the other day, like, you know, he'll sit up in those self-climbing stands and sits on the edge of a clear cut or something or, you know, regrowth. And he'll watch other hunters just push bucks and push deer that they never see, you know. And he used to even rifle hunt in a tree stand back in the day.
Yeah, well, we've talked about doing it.
Yeah.
You and I have.
I'd like to try it.
Well, especially when we were doing the archery thing around here.
Yeah.
I don't know another way you can do it, really. I mean, we've tried it.
For blacktail?
Yeah, it's tough.
It's so thick, yeah. It's hard to blacktail hunt with a bow.
God dang, it's tough.
It's real tough. And I mean, I still have my Willamette tag. You've kind of decided you're going to let yours go at this point.
I already did. Submitted that thing.
Just because you submitted your outcomes, I don't think you have to stop hunting.
Yeah.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I already said, did you hunt on this tag? No.
Yeah, no. I'm over it.
And then I submitted it.
Yeah. I've got another month. So
I don't know why I did. I've something about that tag, hunting that close to other like private land and stuff. It just made me feel weird.
It's a hard tag to hunt because there's nowhere to hunt unless you know somebody. So then you're hunting on the public ground you can find is like tree farm permits. And then typically they're right around houses and you got to be archery or shotgun only. I've wanted to try the river approach, but we didn't ever figure that out.
It's hard right now.
Yeah. we've had a little bit of rain coming down.
Yeah, a little bit of rain.
Ice melting. And
with the Green Pier being wide open, it's moving pretty quick.
Yeah, the rivers currently are pretty swollen, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, not much getting on it right now.
Hey, there's one swimming.
Yeah. In my rubber raft. Yeah. That'd be a tough go. We should have tried it in September when we said.
Yeah, I know. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd put in for it again. I think I'm not that into that tag. I know guys that like it a lot, but I think they have probably some hookups of where they go hunt.
Yeah. So. Well, I know a lot of people that like it. Austin Nichols really likes it, but he has people he can go to like on their property and hunt.
Why haven't we reached out to Austin?
I don't know. Well, I did.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And he said, yeah, just let me know. And then I didn't let him know.
But it's also like, hey, can your hookup hook us up?
You know, yeah, I'm not a big fan of that either.
I'm not either. I like to have my own spots.
Yeah. I wish other people would feel the same way.
Yeah. Or just one layer of somebody hooking you up.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're hooking me up or my cousin over east is hooking me up, I'm good with that. But if it's like one of their buddy's spots, then that feels a little too much.
Yeah, it feels weird. Well, even when we went elk hunt with Nick, I felt so bad about that, even though he works all the time. He doesn't really have the time to hunt, but he works for a timber company. He was kind enough to let us tag along with him on first season coast tag, and it was fun. It just, like, at the same time, I just felt like I needed to give him, like, $5,000, you know?
What was really fun about it is we'd pull up to a gate, and he's like, oh, yeah, I got a key for that one.
Yeah.
And you're like, all these gates that are normally locked, and he had keys to all of them, and he's just letting us in, and, you know, we're going on these various hunts. And they were all fairly short hunts, you know, but big open or big steep.
Yeah, and there's plenty of elk sign to let you know that they've been there.
Yeah. Well, and I was with Nick at the bottom of one of them, and we heard that shot, and we were fired up. We thought you guys had got one, and there was another group with, like, 20 people in it that must have been on radios because they were just bouncing all around.
Well, I think because I told you about that elk crossing, Kyle, and I saw that next day coming across the road right below that clear cut we were in. I think that those guys pushed the elk off that hill that we originally hunted in that first morning. And then they came across the road through a farmer's field, and they were one draw over from where Kyle and I were when that shot went off. Like, they were super close, within, I bet, 300 yards of us when they shot that elk.
Yeah, it was close. Yeah, it's the elk thing, I do think I want to put a little more energy, but honestly, I think I talked about this a while back, but I just, deer hunting to me is where it's at. I don't mule deer hunting in particular for me is my favorite thing to do.
Yeah.
And then blacktail hunting is a close second. My antelope hunt was really cool, but we get to do that every 15 years in Oregon. So, you know, you can't get too excited about it. It's fun, but it's not something I'm going to get to do very often. I'm going to go on a spring bear hunt this year. So we're going to go hunt one of those big elk units for bear, just because we've never hunted those areas, just to check them out and see the elk herds too, hopefully, and maybe bump into a bear.
So. Yeah. You and I could have tagged out on antelope during that deer season.
Oh, yeah, we could have.
My goodness. Nice. And I thought too, they didn't stick around people that much, but they didn't leave until we started pushing towards them farther. But they were within 100 yards of us that entire morning.
Yeah.
With like three bucks in the group.
Yeah, that herd of antelope is not real skittish, because they're down in that deep hole that they don't think anybody's coming into, I think.
Yeah. It was crazy. And then they ran past us, turned around, ran back, stopped on that flat, and then dropped down and ran away.
And watched us from the other side. Yeah.
It was the craziest thing, because we had them in between us and a giant buck when we were hunting Jake that last day.
Yeah, I wish we would have got that giant one for him.
I think we stopped one short. I really do.
Yeah, one ridge.
Yeah. I saw, like, I had a feeling. Well, I knew we were going to see a buck where Jake ended up, that buck Jake ended up killing. I knew there was going to be one there, but I feel like if we would have poked around that next ridge line, there would have been another one vetted right there.
Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about that spot is we've been going there for a long time, and I saw so much different country than I've hunted before. Not that there was anything wrong with those other draws either that we've hunted in the past, but this spot that you guys have dialed in, it's like there's so many angles you can hunt it from. So it accommodates a large party to hunt too.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can got guys with various levels of mobility, you know, can still hunt it.
Yeah. So it's relatively easy even to get the deer out. It's just once they're in that draw, it's a tough 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's the shortest, steepest hill in the world, I swear.
Yeah.
But we found some more stuff, because I've been big Onyx guy now. Shout out to Nick Budding for that.
Got me on the Onyx finally, huh? I'm a multi-state Onyx guy, preparing for Idaho.
Yeah, but
so
you
I
need
just
it.
Upgraded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've been putting waypoints down, like, left and right, because there's a bunch of draws that we haven't even attempted to touch in that hole that we keep hunting. There's a ton of deer in what we already see, but all we have to do is go one more ridge, and who knows what's on the other side of that one.
So, I mean, this mule deer hunt coming up this next year, I'm probably going to get the archery tag. And my goal with that is to find a spot where we know we've seen nice deer and just sit there all day in some cover, you know?
I think you could get down there, that same spot.
Well, even where, there, really. Like, your dad watched that three-point bed down, and where we watched hi-hat come in, you know, somewhere where you could have a shot on where their beds are and just have some natural cover behind a bush or whatever, and just camoed up and just sitting there with your bow. And
now I wonder if they would have that same pattern with less pressure.
Yeah. That's the
other tricky part.
Yeah. That's the variable that it's hard to say if that was a natural spot that they bedded at, or they were just hiding from everybody.
I will say with the archery one, they were, cause when we went with Kyle, they were running in a group Well, not all the bucks, but, man, majority of them, it was at least two or three, you know?
Hanging out with does.
Minimum. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest group was seven bucks.
And I'm not going to be super picky during archery, since I've never killed a buck with my bow. So it's like, if I can get a shot in range, I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I probably won't shoot a real little teeny baby one, but, you know, Anything beyond that, I'm probably going to send an arrow.
Absolutely.
So we keep saying we're going to have Kyle on to talk about his archery hunt, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
He's busy.
I know. He's got, three kids?
He's got three kids. He's building a shop at his place. Got a bunch of stuff going on right now.
Yeah. He made a darn good shot on a mule deer this year with the bow.
He did. It was his first time actually spending and putting in effort over there in Eastern Oregon. And it was, I think it was eye opening for him in a lot of ways, because here it's so brushy that you're using your binos real close to you. There you can glass for 2 miles and find a deer standing because it's wide out in the open, and then figuring out how to get close to one without any cover.
With a bow
is a little different.
Yeah.
You know, and it's loud walking in that time of year too, because all that
underbrush
is loud.
On those Montana decoys, like if we got the Black Angus cow one, for example, for the archery hunt, and you got behind one of those, you think that would make a difference?
I think it could down there, because that one ranch has those cows in it.
Yeah, there's some free range cattle, and that way if you are making some noise, but you have that silhouette, I don't know the legalities of that. I think they're legal, but I don't really know.
And I think so.
It'd be another thing to have to deal with.
Yeah, just getting hung up on brush, I think it would just get you mad more than anything. But I think if you got right to the edge of that and you sat and looked down on that bench where those deer kept jumping up, I think you'd find one bedded down. This is 60 yards straight below us where Kyle and I kept jumping them up. But that was the problem with Kyle. After he started realizing that you could look farther, then he wasn't looking closer. Mm. So we popped over the top of this same ridge that Jake shot his on, and right on that flat, there's 5 bucks laying there and like 4 or 5 does or something. And all I see is this rack sticking up above this log, and I'm like, God, there's a buck right there. And he's looking past him into the bottom. And he keeps going, I have no idea what you're talking about. And then I didn't look right below Kyle's feet. It was 20 yards from Kyle. There's a 3-point bedded down right below us on the bottom of this rim rock.
Wow.
And so that buck stood up first and turned and stood broadside to me. And I said, right below you. And by that time, Kyle didn't see that buck right below him. He saw the next buck out, but it was still behind the log, bedded down. Buck right below him started taking off, scared Kyle half to death. Like, I thought Kyle was falling off the rim rock.
Because what's the distance?
That first buck close to him was about 20.
20 yards?
20 yards, yeah.
Man.
And then that second one, the bigger one, was like it was a straight 4-point, I think, with double eye guards. That was 65 to that. Jeez. But then they all get up, single filed, got up, stopped broadside on the other side, but that's 200 yards.
Yeah.
At this point. And then just kind of funneled up underneath this tree and bedded back down.
Was it like midday?
This was like 9 o'clock probably.
Oh, man. That's crazy.
And then I think, man, probably 2 days later after that happened, we were there a whole week. He got a couple decent looks at a couple really nice bucks and fell a little short, you know. Just one of them kind of spooked and went back an additional 10 yards and kind of just miscalculated that, you know, offhand. But then he put a absolute perfect pinwheeled this fork and horn that he ended up getting. We were kind of getting down in the dumps because it was our last full day and it just wasn't panning out. And we're all kind of bummed. We're going to check out some more spots that we haven't really spent a lot of time in because we were starting to get pretty frustrated with, you know, where we always rifle hunt. And I just happened to look out the pickup as we were driving. There's deer standing on the side of the road. And my dad stops. I pick up binos. First deer I see is a fork and horn standing there feeding. And he had a window. It was probably a 2-foot window that he could shoot. And I think it was an 83-yard shot. And Kyle's he is shooting his bow every single day, all year long. And he shoots as much as he can.
He does a bunch of 3D shoots too.
So. Constant shooting.
Yeah.
So he's very comfortable with this setup and how he can shoot and how far he can shoot. And he already told us that like 85 was kind of, he didn't want to shoot anything past 85. So this was pushing it. So he pulls back, is quartering to us, kind of feeding, and he kind of walked off the road and got down to where it get him a little bit better angle and shoots and just absolutely pinwheeled that deer. It was the coolest. It was literally the coolest thing that you could see because it, you could watch the arrow path and it just fell right into that window underneath these branches and just drilled him.
Man, that's cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, I mean, that archery thing over there, the last time I did it was 2 years ago with my brother, and we were like one of three people over there.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody was elk hunting, but nobody was deer hunting. And so nobody cared, you know, and we saw so many bucks. But it's amazing. Like, you see one at 60, 70 yards, and by the time you're trying to make a play on it, it's at 120, yeah. You know? Or, like, the two biggest bucks we saw were 90, and they were bedded. And we tried to, you know, sneak in on them, and we got, the closest we got was 90, and then it was like we went for like one more step, and then they were at 200.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then they were just looking back at you.
Yeah. So, kind of laughing.
Yeah.
On the way out.
Could have taken a 90 one. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm not ready to take a 90-yard shot at a deer, I don't think. I definitely know I'm not, but.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It's so different, too, over there because everything looks closer than it is.
Yeah.
Because I've taken a couple that I'm like, okay. Like, even I've ranged a couple that came up closer than what they were because I hit a branch. Like, I wasn't the best with it yet. Like, I just didn't figure it out yet. I didn't have enough of those real life, in the moment situations to where I could understand that, hey, there's a branch right there. You need to crouch or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, one, I remember it was a 4-point. I ranged them for, I think it was like 50 yards, and it looked 50 because it's just what it looked like, but it was ended up being 90. And it wasn't, my arrow didn't come anywhere close to that thing.
Yeah. No, you got to put some time behind the bow. I mean, just, I've been shooting my gun at the range, and I've got two of my guns just tack driving now, which just makes me feel good that I have that confidence, you know? And you got to do the same thing with a bow. And I think to a degree that's your margin of error with a bow is a lot smaller than with a gun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So guns can be a little bit forgiving.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Absolutely, they can. I've seen some horrific shots with the rifle that
still work
just
out.
Drops.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Right.
But with the bow, they go for days.
Yeah, and I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that guy. So,
especially that time of year.
Oh gosh,
it's so hot.
Yeah. It's 100 degrees out. You don't want a wounded deer.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Well, trophy edition of the Outdoor Adventures podcast. Would you do this again? Would you fill around with measuring deer?
Yeah. I want to get the big one off the wall. Mm-hmm. I want to try that one. I want to get both these blacktails done. I want to do that 4x5 with all the mess on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would love to. I think it's something, and I like these papers because we labeled them all as to what buck it is.
Yeah, and it was fun. It wasn't hard. I don't know how accurate we are, but I think we're probably within, I mean, 10 inches is a large margin of error, but I would say we'd be probably within 10 inches on most of them.
Yeah. I wonder if this is how we do the big buck bet.
You could.
Other than, that's the only difference though, because that fork and horn is a pretty good trophy. Like, that's like a unique big buck for me anyways. Yeah.
Well, and we already talked that if you kill hi-hat, that's an automatic win.
I think that's bold. That's an automatic win. Because like, you're saying it beats that one.
I'm not saying it beats that, but it's an elusive buck. That buck doesn't like to die.
I don't think any of them did.
Yeah, but he's tough. He's eluded us for a long time.
He has. If it is Blade, yeah.
Yeah, if it is. We like to keep that legend going. It's at least the same genetics.
Yeah. I mean, it'd just be hard to believe that now how old would he be? 8?
Something like that.
I mean, it's possible.
He's thick. I bet you he's thicker than that buck.
Probably. But he's about, I think his inside spread would be 10 inches.
Yeah. So he's not 21. Yeah. No. And he's straight up.
Straight up.
As far as the touching. Score sheet goes, I don't think you're going to win the day on that one. Yeah,
it's not going to score high. But I was kind of wondering if we did that or we do like add up number of points. So that one you'd get, you'd even count eye guards. So that one 10 would points. Be a 10, right? Mm-hmm. And then you do the biggest place circumference. More phone calls in the podcast, please.
That's my son.
Measure of the biggest circumference and then inside spread.
Yeah. Yeah.
And height.
Yeah. Let's just keep it a little more simple than a full score sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might not be bad.
That way, you know, that buck could probably cheat a little more because it's so tall and wide.
But also like Charlie's versus Billy's, you know, he's got the double eye guard. So they each start with 10 points, but he's 4x5 with one eye guard and you got a 4x4 with two eye guards, you know, so yeah. They each start with 10 and then the circumference and the main beam length or whatever.
I wouldn't be surprised if those were like just a couple inches apart.
Oh, I bet they're the really close. Done. Yeah, they're very similar. Well, this was fun. We'll do it again. And it'd be cool to, like you said, to have someone that really knows what they're doing measure the same deer that we did and see how far off we are.
So. Yeah, see if we even should continue doing that.
Right, yeah. They're going to be like, you guys need to watch some more YouTube.
Yeah.
We should have watched a YouTube ahead of time. Would have been smart, but we just went off the score sheet.
Yeah, I almost pulled one up, and then I kind of gave up on it.
We needed your phone for a calculator.
Yeah. Yeah.
And mine was recording, so.
Yeah, or if anybody wants to give some tips.
Yeah,
I'd appreciate it.
Scorers out there. You know, yeah. We've got this lady potentially coming on the podcast soon who is a taxidermist, and she could have probably helped us out.
That would probably be the person we should take these heads to.
Yeah, she'd probably know how to do it. She's at SCI right now. So,
yeah, that'd be cool.
I think it's this week or next week.
That'd be cool. And we're doing the sportsman show with the booth.
So two weekends from today.
Come get a hat.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're going to have hats. Some t-shirts, some sweatshirts, some Gen 1 hats, and Gen 2.
Yeah.
Gen 1s have half seam and the OAP crew stitched on the back, so they're a little more expensive.
Yeah. But don't worry, Sam will give them to you for free.
Dylan gets mad when I give away all the swag. Yeah.
Come up. You guys, we need people to come out and hang out. We're thinking about even having a little sign up for guests.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Come on the podcast.
So it's the Willamette Valley Sportsman Show. I don't know if this episode will air before the show. I think it should, but we do have one other one.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That we're going to release. That's we got a little different. We didn't really talk about outdoors. We just talked about all kinds of random.
Yeah.
America things.
Just complained for about an hour.
Hour and a half.
Yeah.
We went
did
long.
A lot of complaining.
Yeah. Anyone that can get through that episode deserves something. But yeah, maybe we'll put this one out first. And so you can come all, you all come out and see us at the Willamette Valley Sportsman Show.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think 9th, 10th, and 11th. Super Bowl's that Sunday. So
come watch Super Bowl with us.
Yeah. No, it gets over at 3.
Oh.
So on
Sunday.
I have
no idea how any of this is working. Sam's doing it all.
Yeah.
I'm just showing up.
Yeah, no, it'll be fun. There's some good people. They got the Endicott's doing some seminars on blacktail hunting and whatnot. So,
and then the next week we're gonna try to do the Portland, sportsman show. We're gonna try to. I know you have some plans.
I do have some plans up in Washington.
Some famous cook or some chefs.
It's a brew fest at the Illinois Casino.
Illinois
Casino up in, I say it wrong every time, up in Washington. And we went a while back for some of these Food Network type chef thing. They do events there, and it's pretty cool, like, to eat some of that food and just hang out. And we're going with my brother and his wife. It's kind of a double date situation.
You going to meet Gordon Ramsay or something?
No, this time it's...
or Jeff Gordon.
Jet Tila. Do you know him?
No.
He's pretty good. And then... something, I can't think of her name. I can see her face. I know her last name is Alfonza. She's on like a lot of the Guy Fieri or Fieri show episodes.
Second one was right, I think.
Yeah, Guy Fieri. Mm-hmm. Antonia LaFonza is going to be there. She's pretty cool. She's a good chef. And then there's a few good Portland chefs that I like. Gregory, I can't remember his last name. And another one, Doug Adams, I think is his name. But it'll be cool. It'll be fun. And we'll eat some good food and hang out and be in a casino for a night.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Go gamble your life away. Make this podcast some money, dude.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to monetize this.
Yeah, sure.
I've tried. Instacart.
I know. Yeah, you're on Instacart now. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I was on the waiting list for a long time, and then they said, hey, do you want to do Instacart? And I said, sure. So I signed up to do it. I've delivered two things, and the first one was 25 chicken breasts and 24 eggs to a Thai restaurant. And the second one was a 6-pack of beers.
And you got $20?
I've made $20.
Very I don't know good.
How much I've lost in fuel and time, but
no, it's good. It's a good thing to, it's another hobby that you need.
Yeah. Another activity to make my wife happy with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, hon. I'll be late. I'm Instacart.
I got an Instacart tonight.
Got four items to get.
Hey, it's been kind of fun. I've been doing it with my daughter, other than the alcohol, obviously. I made her wait in the car on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, she helped me with the chicken breasts and the eggs, and it was just kind of fun.
Yeah, she seems pretty excited about it.
Yeah. So it's something to do. I told her we split the profits 80-20. Mm-hmm. Since I have the vehicle and the driver's license, mm-hmm. I feel like, you know.
She gets 80?
No, I get the 80. Yeah, I feel like it's more fair.
I think that her getting the 80 is better.
Yeah, I know. But times are tough. Mm-hmm. And then we bought, the first night when we made $10, we went to Burgerville and got 3 cheeseburgers for $24. So I was like, huh, the math isn't working on this.
And what did you say today if you did 10?
Oh, if I do my first 10 by the end of January, which is only, it's, today's what, the 29th or something? Mm-hmm. I got like 3 or 4 days. They'll pay me $120 bonus.
Just a bonus on top?
Yeah, so I'm 2 down. I got 8 to go.
Well, you better get on it.
I know. Better stop. My daughter wants to go do it today. So
yeah, we sign off. Sign off.
All right, we're signing off. We got to go Instacart. thanks for tuning in, everybody.